Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning. Take your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We'll be joined by Corey Curtis from News 2 coming up at 8 o'clock. So we'll get more into the Titans and Joe's favorite subject of the NFL Combine with him coming up at 8 o'clock. So
thank
looking forward to
goodness.
That. Looking forward to that coming up next hour. So the Nashville Predators, Joe. Busy week a week ago. I went on Fox 17 last night and kind of broke down the week that was for the Predators. And let me tell you, a lot went on last week for the Nashville Predators. It was a lot to sort through. And there was one move that I think both you and I expected to be made Friday that did not get made. And, in fact, the opposite move of that got made on Friday. And that, of course, is Dante Fabbro. We've talked a lot about Dante Fabbro and what his status is going to look like. I thought that he was a prime trading candidate for the Predators. You know, Jeff Merrick from Sportsnet reported a week and a half ago that he expected Fabbro to be moved by the deadline. He listed the San Jose Sharks as a potential candidate there. But obviously, the equation has changed for the Predators since then, and they dealt Matthias Ekholm, and now their blue line looks different. Cal Foote has come in. Ekholm has moved out. Tyson Barrie has come in. And on Friday, it was announced that Dante Fabbro signed a one-year, $2.5 million extension with the Nashville Predators. So he was scheduled to become a restricted free agent after this season, and it's now been extended by 1 year. So I guess in the grand scheme of things, it doesn't change a whole lot. I mean, it's a one-year extension, and then you're back in a similar situation where you've got to figure out exactly what you think Fabbro is and what he's going to be as a part of your team as you move forward here, or what he's going to be maybe somewhere else. But I got to tell you, I did not expect an extension coming from Dante Fabbro on Friday, albeit a one-year extension at $2.5 million.
I saw some people like, this ruins the entire trading deadline. Calm down, everybody.
Take a breath.
I didn't see that either. It does make me think, again, it's just 1 year, like you said, but like just next year's defense corps, what's the plan? Is it possible that Carrier's not in the plans?
I mean, I guess it's possible.
That would surprise me.
But I would say it's possible. I mean, look, they've signed Fabbro to a one-year extension.
Right.
So they could still trade him this offseason, and it wouldn't be that big of a deal. I mean, it's a one-year, $2.5 million cap hit. So it's not
if
like
someone likes him, that's a
– right.
Like, it's not prohibitive.
You're not talking about huge money. So I guess you could still trade him this offseason. But, like, if your plan was to trade him, I don't know why you wouldn't just hold off and say, yep, he's a restricted free agent. You figure out his contract, and we'll trade him to you. So that kind of tells me their plan's not to trade him this offseason. They just want to continue to see what he looks like. Now, another part of this, and I heard some of this before he even played for the Predators, and honestly, I've watched him play out there a little bit. I have not been overly impressed by it. Like, Cal Foote, I don't know that they are super high on what they've got there. I mean, obviously, he was part of the Tanner Janot trade.
Right.
And they got so many assets back that, I mean, they took Cal Foote along with it. But I heard even before he played a game for the Predators that they're not exactly sure what he is
and that
what
would
he's going to be.
And that would line up
right
to me. Because one thing I thought was, okay, well, I mean, whenever there's a former first-round pick, and they both are, Fabbro and Foote, you always think, oh, I mean, that's Cody Glass coming in. Hey, that's starting to turn out decent, right?
Yes.
But you go that way. But, yeah, if they don't like Cal Foote, then that makes it a little easier to understand. How's it all sorting out? And then also you have is McDonough here for the duration of his deal? But
right.
Have the A on his chest, and that's that?
Yeah, it's a great question. And you've got Barry that's come in now, and he's played pretty well for you so far. Like, what's he going to be as they move forward here? I mean, the Ekholm, it's clear, like, the Ekholm part of this has changed the way they view their defense corps, right? I mean, it has to. When you trade somebody like Matthias Ekholm away, and I said it last year, when they signed McDonough, that immediately signaled to me the end of the road for one of Fabbro or Carrier. Well, I did not anticipate Matthias Ekholm getting traded, but it did. And when you do that, like, it changes the equation there.
Both of those guys could still be here.
They could still be here.
We know that Jeremy Lauzon is under contract. He's probably going to be here.
I would say the chances are high that he's probably going to be here. JC in Goodlettsville says, Fabbro signing is an indictment of the status of defensemen in the system. This is from JC from Goodlettsville. And we've talked about that, too.
But like, it is just 1 year again.
It is just 1 year. Like, it's not like they've signed him to some long-term deal here. But I do wonder if they felt good about some of the defensemen they had coming up in the pipeline, is this a move that they would make?
Right.
I think it's a fair question.
But it could be they do feel good, but just not right now.
Could be.
But it's certainly not the treasure chest usually was.
Well, look, I think you would agree, and I think a lot of Predators fans would agree. Like, Fabbro, to me, has not been overly impressive this year. I mean, I think he's been largely what he's been his whole career, which is there are games where he looks pretty good, and there are games where he looks pretty bad, and it's kind of just a back and forth of the two. Now, I'll say this. I think lately he's played pretty well. Like, I like the way that Dante Fabbro has played of late, and maybe the idea is, all right, play him higher, get him more minutes, and see what he does with it. But I feel like he's also just kind of been in the same spot that he's been in for 2 years, which is looks good for a little while, and then it looks bad, and then he's a healthy scratch, and then you just restart this whole process all over again. And that's why I thought he might get moved on Friday.
Yeah. Well, look, and then there's – and I know some people, and I bet you if I haven't looked at the text line in a few minutes, I know someone's going to bring up Tolvanen and John Hines and say, well, so, you know, different coaching, and maybe Fabbro becomes something different. Just remember – Peter Laviolette had him for a decent amount of time, too, and he came right in and was extremely mature and poised at that age in that playoff series, and yep. Then it just hasn't really developed as the Preds have hoped with two different coaches.
Well, it's clear to me that he came in, he was really impressive in that playoff series like you talked about, but he was playing on the third pair, and he was playing with Dan Hamhuis, and then they let P.K. Subban go, and they thought that he was ready, and he wasn't ready. He was not ready to be a top-four defenseman. After that. And I think they've been searching for a way to get him back to there, to where he is ready. I would describe him now as he can fill in the top four in a pinch for you. I still don't think he's a top four defenseman.
So I just don't know that, like, I don't know that you can use the word ready anymore, right?
Right. No, he's been in the, he's got a good amount of games now.
I think he's just, like, and this is the problem with Fabbro, is that he can be solid and be a good piece in your defense core. But because he was a first-round pick, it's just always going to be viewed through that lens.
Right. Jason from Mount Juliet, to your point, says maybe they want to give him one more look with another head coach. This is from Jason from Mount Juliet on text.
I mean, I don't know. Now, yeah. I'm not saying that that's wrong, but you disappoint me in not including Tolvanen in your text.
Text back in, Jason.
Yes.
Make sure
add that for you.
Make sure you've got Tolvanen in there, too. I don't know. Like, their defense core is in an interesting spot right now. I mean, obviously, you've got Yossi. But, like, again, like, if you're Ryan McDonough, what are you thinking right now? Are you going to try to push for a trade this offseason? I mean, obviously, you're not going anywhere now because the deadline's come and gone. But are you going to try to push for a trade this offseason? Like, Barry Trotz, when he spoke, I mean, he made it pretty clear. He loves him some Ryan McDonough. And he thinks players like Ryan McDonough are really important. Like, do the Predators want him around? Like, do they have any choice? Like, I'm still not sure that with that cap hit, as he continues to get older, anybody's going to take him. Like, you know, that's a $6.75 million cap hit for the next 3 years, and he's already 33. He's about to be 34.
Right. Yeah. So he might be here. And I'm sure if you're him, in terms of like asking for something or not, you want to know, okay, so are you guys going to try to go get some people this offseason, or is it me and I'm kindergarten cop next year?
Right. Nice.
Thank you.
Very nicely done. 615-737-1025. So the trade deadline has come and gone, and this is the Predators team. This is what they're moving forward with. What do you make of the moves the Predators have made, and how well positioned do you think the Predators are to do whatever they want to do in the future, whether that be a rebuild, whether that be a restock this offseason? Take it any way you want to take it. 615-737-1025. We'll continue that discussion coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. We are live from our 102.5 The Game studio. Brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Taking your thoughts on the Preds, 615-737-1025. So the NHL trading deadline has come and gone, and this is the group the Predators are moving forward with, at least for now. What do you make of the moves that the Predators have made? And what do you make of the outlook for this team given the moves that were made at the deadline? 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. By the way, Joe, on the Predators front, they did win over the weekend. They took down the Chicago Blackhawks, and they are 6 points out of a playoff spot with 3 games in hand on Winnipeg, who holds the final spot. I'm just saying. They leapfrog Calgary, too.
Mm-hmm.
They're the first team out in the West right now.
Fork in the road, guys. Do you want to make the playoffs, or do you want to bleep the bed for Bedard?
Well, they played Chicago. They've played Arizona last week. They got Vancouver coming up tonight. They got Arizona again on Thursday. So the easy part of their schedule, quote-unquote, is getting ready to change around a little bit, although they do have Anaheim coming up. They got Chicago again at home next week. They got Detroit. And then it's the Winnipeg Jets and the New York Rangers and the Kraken twice and the Maple Leafs and the Bruins again. So it's about to change around on them here in a couple of weeks when the schedule gets more difficult again. But I will say they're playing pretty well right now, and they got some winnable games coming up starting tonight in Vancouver.
You know, to the point of totally separate topic, but just as you go through that, I think back to our conversation with John Hines last week. How important do you think just like actual results will be in Barry Trotz's evaluation of John Hines?
I mean, I don't think it's going to be – I'll put it to you this way. If they play really well and they make a playoff push, it will speak well of the job that John Hines has done. If they lose a lot moving forward, like I think it's easy to look at the roster and say, well, there's a bunch of 22-year-olds out here, and you traded away our best defensive defenseman, our second leading goal scorer, a top six forward in Mikael Granlund. Like, what do you expect to happen? Like, so I think it's going to be – I think he's got an opportunity to really help himself. If they nosedive and they miss the playoffs by 10 or 12 points, like, is that going to necessarily mean that he's absolutely fired? I don't think so. I think Perry Trotz will evaluate the whole picture, if that makes sense.
Makes sense. So no matter what happens, he's fine.
Yeah. Well, you said on Friday he's the coach next year. That's your called shot.
That was my called shot. But there's a reason it was on called shot Friday, not just like randomly set on a Tuesday.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. There is a reason that was on call your shot Friday. So now that the dust is settled, Joe, I was talking about this on TV last night. I think the Predators in the span of a week have almost totally changed the trajectory of their franchise in terms of how the fan base feels about the hope moving forward, the assets that they've accumulated with the draft picks that they've acquired, and the flexibility that they've created with their cap as well. There's a lot that's changed in the course of a week that I think you've got options now with if you're the Predators. Now, it's great to have options. You have to make the right selections with your draft picks. If you do choose to use some of those assets to make trades, you got to make the right trades. Like, the work's not done just because you've cleared up all this room. I mean, we've seen people clear up room all the time and then just refill the room with stupid contracts, and then they're right back in the same situation. So
right.
There's still work left to be done. But I will say the trajectory of where they're going feels way different, and I think for most Predators fans, feels way more positive than it did this time a week and a half, 2 weeks ago.
Yeah. The next question, no question. I mean, the fan base has done a 180. But – what I'd like to – now it's the next question for the fan base. Okay, so would you rather this be a little bit of a longer process? Young players, you know, taking your time, trying to, you know, build up to something, or would you rather Barry Trotz go right out and bundle a bunch of those picks and then go try to – whatever it is. You can try the RFA route or just, you know, try to make a trade, try to – the free agent, the – the free agent market doesn't look very good this summer. But whatever it is, do you want them to immediately try to kind of reset with a bigger deal or two and be competitive right away next year? Could they be good enough in that approach?
It's a great question because I've thought about that too. And you can make the argument both ways. Like the argument for Barry Trotz to go out and try to reload this offseason is this. It's, well, Roman Josi's not getting any younger.
Yep.
You have UC Saros as your goalie.
Forsberg's not getting younger either.
Forsberg's not getting any younger. Like, go out and try to maximize what you've got and bring in – see if you can go make a trade and bring in a number one quality center and see what you can do there. See if, you know, some of your younger guys, some of your younger draft picks that you've already made, not the ones that you've just created for yourself, but your Tomasinos or your Svechkovs or your Leroux or whoever it is, are they ready in the next year or two to take a next step and for you to be competitive there? That's the argument to go that way. And the argument to say, why don't you just hold off and let's go through a little bit of a rebuild here is in 2 years, Ryan Johansson's contract's off the books. And in 3 years, Matt Duchene's contract is off the books. And you've got Josi under contract. He'll still be under contract then. We feel good about him at least being good then. Maybe not the same player he is now, but good then. And then all of a sudden, 3 years from now, you've got $16 million freed up in cap space. Hopefully some of your younger players have come in and have kind of ascended to that next level. And, oh, by the way, you have these just plethora of draft picks that you've acquired over the course of the past couple of weeks. And maybe some of those guys that you select with those picks are ready to go at that time. That's the argument the other way. Which one sounds better if you're a Predators fan? I don't know.
So I go back to Ryan McDonagh.
Right.
Take your second thing and flush it. Launch it into the sun, Robbie.
Yes. I'm sure that would be his approach.
I really think, like, Josi and Forsberg in particular, if you're in those offices, okay, how much, and it's different. Josi is older than Forsberg, but yep. It's like, are we talking Norris-level play for how much longer, you know? Because the deal is huge, and the deal is going to hurt on the back end. You know that, but that's what happens. But do you look at it like these next 2 years are what you could count on him being that level? And then after that, I don't know. If you think of it that way, then you're kind of missing your window by doing your second thing there.
Well, he's 32, and he's going to be 33 in June. So June 1st, Josi turns 33. And look, I still think I've said this for a long time about Josi. Barring an injury that we've not seen yet, and knock on wood, we don't see it. He skates and moves well enough that I think even when he's diminished a little bit, he'll still move well. Now, he's got 1, 2, 3, 4. He's got 5 years left on his deal after this one.
So you know he's going to be here.
He's going to be here. He's got 5 years left. Obviously, Forsberg, he just signed another deal. So he's got 7 years left after this one. So he's going to be here for a while, too. So you know that those two guys, and look, Forsberg, by the time that deal's done, being in his mid-30s, it's different than Josi's. Like, Josi's contract takes him through age 37, and then the following year he'll be 38. So it's basically the quote-unquote end of his career at that point. I would love to know, like David Poile said on our show, that he has had conversations. You asked him the question. He's had conversations with veteran players throughout the year about the team, about the direction, all those things. And we've talked about who that could possibly mean, whether that's Ekholm or McDonagh. There's one person I can guarantee you he's had those conversations with, and that's Roman Josi.
Oh, no doubt.
And what does he think about the way that they're going and how long it could take? Because if I'm Josi, I'm looking at this and I'm saying, I love it here. Like, I want to finish my career here. Obviously, when I signed the deal, I wanted the no trade protection. I want to be here. I also want to win, and I don't want to sit here for the next 4 years while I can still play good hockey and watch this thing be rebuilt. Maybe that's his viewpoint. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'd love to know the exact content of those discussions, but you have to think about those things. April in Portland said, extremely happy with the changes made at the deadline. Love the Lankin and signing. Okay with Fabro. I think Trotz sees something in him. Firing Hines would be the icing on the cake. That's the one thing the fan base is still pissed about. I want to win. Don't want to go the other route because you never know. Like someone else here says, you know, Maddie says, we need to take our time. I'd rather have a chance at a dynasty versus one major run. If you actually have a chance at a dynasty, then yeah, go that route. But again, it's like, this is where you have, and it's kind of like you look at the Titans too. It's like, it's hard to get everything lined up with timelines, you know? And so it's like with the Titans, like Byard and some of these veterans on defense, it's like, man, you want to be good now. How much longer do you have? But also you can make the other case. Like, you're going to go right back out there and strap yourself to some – I mean, you have to just make good choices either way, right? Good choices.
I mean, there is another route, and that is maybe for the next month and a half here, don't be very good.
Well.
And give yourself a chance, albeit a very small one, but a chance to end up with number one overall pick and go get Connor Bedard. Because let me tell you, if by some miracle that happens and you end up with the number one overall pick and you get Bedard,
there's your dynasty.
Then things change very quickly.
Yep. An avalanche of cups in Nashville. On your way. No, imagine just that day. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago, because with the rules, with the bubble and everything, they actually were in there for Lafreniere.
Yeah.
It didn't work out.
How all first-round picks are not created equal.
Exactly.
First overall.
Good player.
Yeah, he's all right.
But, I mean, everybody's like, oh, my God. Yeah. But this one's a little different. I think this one's going to hit.
Oh, yeah. If you watched him play, he's going to hit. I don't have any doubt about that. 615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your thoughts on the Preds. Coming up next, we'll get into the Tennessee and Vanderbilt discussion leading in to the SEC tournament this week here in Nashville. What's going on with the Vols, and does Vanderbilt have a chance to claw their way into the NCAA tournament? We'll get into all that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.
How is Liam Robbins doing? I know you said in your post-game radio interview, probably could miss the rest of the season, but what is the latest on Liam?
Well, man, he's actually really should be actually in surgery right now to repair a fracture in his lower leg. So he's definitely be out for the season, but we're hoping for successful surgery this morning and a speedy recovery for him to get back. Liam has been unbelievable for us this year. He's gotten better and better since he's been here. Obviously battled with some injuries before that, but when he was playing at a high level, it elevated our team to a high level, gave our whole team a lot of confidence, and I'm sure that confidence is going to carry on without to our group in the remainder of our games. But unfortunately, he won't be able to finish up with us.
That was Jerry Stackhouse last week on Chase and Michelle discussing the status of Liam Robbins. As we know, he is out for the season, and Vanderbilt will have to move forward without him. And so far, so good. They win 77-72 over the weekend against Mississippi State at home to close out the regular season and are in an interesting spot heading into the SEC tournament. We'll get into the Vanderbilt side of things coming up here in just a few minutes. Tennessee over the weekend as well, Joe. They lose 79-70 on the road at Auburn to close out the season there. Obviously, Zakai Ziegler is out with his torn ACL, and the Vols are going to have to figure out how to operate in his absence as they move into the SEC tournament here. So a disappointing end to the season for Tennessee, and now they head into the tournament without Zakai Ziegler, who, as you've talked about many times, the heart and soul of the team. And what does this mean for not only their chances in the SEC tournament, but when it comes down to it, what kind of a team is Tennessee going to be when the NCAA tournament rolls around? And that's just a heck of a loss that Tennessee has with Zakai Ziegler at the point guard position. So what do you make of the season that Tennessee has had to this point and the loss of Ziegler and what that means as they head into SEC tournament play this week and ultimately the NCAA tournament to follow without their point guard?
Well, 34 minutes of that game at Auburn was exactly the formula for Tennessee. They're going inside. They're playing great defense. They're dominating the boards. They're up 63-60. Vescovy is still able to get shots. He's hitting shots. They're kind of just playing point guard by committee offensively. And then you go the last, I think, 6 minutes, 13 seconds, or 6 minutes plus, no field goals. And you have turnovers. Vescovy gets caught in the lane and turns it over. Josiah James gets caught in the lane and turns it over. Tyreek Key just takes a early, not open, not in rhythm shot like this happens. And look, a lot of these things you saw late in that game also had been happening this team with Zakai Ziegler. So it's not like this just all of a sudden, like these offensive meltdowns and these lulls that they get into where they just are kind of disjointed and not making good decisions. That was also happening with him. Just that at times he could at least get in the lane, get to the line, hit a shot, get somebody a shot. Now you don't have that luxury anymore. But it was kind of it pretty much encapsulated that team pretty well. They can be overwhelming and really impressive still without him. And in some ways, defensively, they don't have to account for mismatches now with him on the floor. They can switch more. They're big. I mean, Jemai Meshack as a point guard, as a one on defense, is great.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. It's like I could see if they play a team in the NCAA tournament or even this week, you know, with a really good point guard that you have to deal with and really be good, not letting him just get in the lane, Meshack is your best bet. But he's not your best bet as your one on the other end. So it's kind of an interesting how do you make that all work. Bottom line, I still think they're a three in the NCAA tournament. I still think they're in Greensboro, but I wouldn't mess around and lose this first game, you know, this week. And honestly, I think the big thing for this week with the Vols is they need as much basketball as they can play. So it's going to be tough to win four games in 4 days and win the title again and repeat as champions. But they need to work this out. So they play
need some cohesion on the floor.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's going to be South Carolina or Ole Miss for them Thursday. And, of course, it's a big disappointment to not get the double bye, which they would have gotten had they held on there. Look at Michelle in there, like, all excited. We got UK fans in the text line already, like, who's better, Joe, Tennessee or Kentucky?
I'm sorry, Joe, but I hate that argument.
You hate what argument?
You're like, well, Tennessee's better even though Kentucky swept them.
Yeah, well, I mean, before they lost Ziegler, they were better than Kentucky. I mean, has Kentucky beaten Kansas, Texas?
You know, I mean, beat Tennessee head-to-head twice with Ziegler.
Yeah, I know they did. But you know how college basketball goes. I mean, you still take the entire body of work of a team, right?
Yeah.
Yeah? No?
But we take head-to-heads, I mean.
I mean, I'm not saying head-to-head doesn't matter, but Tennessee played like
crap. A discussion for another day.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, Tennessee, you know, played like crap, especially in that game at home. Doesn't matter. I would say right now, Kentucky is better than Tennessee without Zakai Ziegler. And they did get the double bye. But Tennessee is going to play South Carolina, Ole Miss, and then they're looking at Missouri Friday, which is kind of a little revenge opportunity for them. So they need to, you know, don't get upset. You get upset Thursday, I mean, you could be a four and get sent wherever.
Yep.
You don't want that. Not that being in Greensboro is, you know, some huge deal, but it's drivable for fans. You'll have a little bit better situation, just shorter trip. And, you know, look, it's just better to be a three and get match up with a six in the second round than be a four and five and then have to play a one in the Sweet 16, which now I'm really making a leap that they're going to make the Sweet 16. But they're still good enough to.
You are making a leap.
I am. But even without Ziegler, this team absolutely is good enough to be a second weekend team in the NCAA tournament. They got to work it out this week. If they beat Missouri, then you get the Alabama semifinal on Saturday.
And then on the Vanderbilt side. Then on the Vanderbilt side of things, they win 77-72 against Mississippi State to close out their regular season. And now they head into the SEC tournament. And we talked about it after that loss to LSU. Like, that was such a damaging loss for Vanderbilt. But since then, they respond. They beat Florida. They get the big one on the road against Kentucky. And then they handle business against Mississippi State over the weekend. So, firstly, I do look back at that LSU loss, and I'm like, geez, if you could just win that game, think about the conversation you'd be in right now. I know that Liam Robbins is hurt, and that's going to be a factor coming down the stretch here. But what do you make of the position that Vanderbilt finds themselves in as they look ahead to the SEC tournament, and they'll get started coming up on Thursday?
Well, it's just so impressive what they've been able to do. And this is the thing. It's like last week you have just terrible situations for Tennessee and Vanderbilt. They both lose their best player, like back-to-back nights, terrible. Vanderbilt still ends up getting a historic win on the night they lose
Liam Robbins.
Liam Robbins, thank you. Although Tennessee actually played great and crushed Arkansas the night they lost Ziegler too, but then following it up for Vanderbilt, and there's a few things apart from the whole NCAA thing, and we're going to talk more about that, but first of all, just 8 of 9, just a really impressive stretch. I think that this last month has done a ton for Jerry Stackhouse in terms of the fan base and just in terms of kind of the vision that he had of this, you know, of what he wants to do with this program, I think there's a different feeling out there among Vanderbilt fans. I think he should be a real candidate for Coach of the Year. I mean, I think it's Oates, Gates, Buzz, and Stackhouse. And I think Oates is going to be, a lot of people are like, yeah, get out of here, dude.
Yeah, I think
which, I mean, I can't blame people for thinking that way. But that's a big deal. The Mississippi State win, first of all, if you watch that game, you know, there's a lot of times of that game where I'm like, boy, Robbins would have erased that shot at the rim, or, man, they could have used Robbins during that offensive drought. It's they're a diminished team. He's been playing like an NBA big, but they still found a way. And Ezra Mannion, and I don't know who came up with this, but I saw it on Twitter. I'm going to steal it. Filet Mignon.
Oh, I like that.
Oh, my goodness. Ezra Filet Mignon.
I like that.
I mean, come on, man. But that guy, it's been those two players. A lot of, and Jordan Wright has been a great story, and they're finding good basketball from a lot of sources. But Ezra Mannion, I would argue, is the I'd be surprised if anybody can show me in college basketball a point guard with a quicker first step or better on the ball defense than Ezra Mannion. He is making so many things happen for them. So they just have been so much fun to watch. It's been really cool. They've revived, you know, and of course that was the last game at Memorial Gym, but it's like the old days of Memorial Gym. So a lot of positivity. Also still, to me, I mean, a lot of work to do, but they are showing up on these boards now for sure. I mean, Shelby Mass at USA Today has got Vanderbilt as his fourth team out now. So I spoke a little probably prematurely when the LSU game said, well, win the SEC tournament or bust. There's a chance for them to get an at-large. But you got to do a lot of work this week.
Well, there is a chance, and that was a heavily debated topic over the weekend on Twitter. And we'll get into that coming up next. Time for another edition of the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad, which you can check out every morning at 7:45. That is next. This is Robbie and Rexroad. But let me tell you this. I got some tickets to give away. A pair of two-day passes to the sold-out Moon River Festival on the banks of the Tennessee River in Chattanooga on September the 9th and 10th with performances by Judah and the Lion, the Marcus King Band, Goodbye Road, and more. Be caller number 5, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller number 5 will win a pair of two-day passes to the sold-out Moon River Festival on the banks of the Tennessee River in Chattanooga coming up September 9th and September 10th. 615-737-1025. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
And I really, you know, I want to see him make the NCAA tournament. And I do agree with Jerry Stackhouse, the way they're playing. You know, you see what they're doing to these SEC teams, even on the road. They'd be a tough out. They would be a tough out. If Vandy made it to the tournament, I'm not going to say they would be like UCLA a couple years ago, the 11 seed that ends up in the Final Four. But I think Vandy would be a tough out. If Vandy made it in and was a 10 seed, I'd hate to be that 2 seed.
Now think about if you're Jerry Stackhouse. You're trying to get into the tournament. You kind of need North Carolina to lose to Duke, right? North Carolina is a bubble team. North Carolina has one win against quad one opponents. One. Vanderbilt has four. And arguably five, you know, that can, it can change depend on, you know, how teams do down the stretch. But Vanderbilt has got better wins than North Carolina by far, but the net has North Carolina way ahead. So that's a tough position to be in. Do you almost root against your alma mater in a way?
Well, I think net stinks.
And it is that time of the day, time for the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rex Road. Joe Rex Road's rant of the day. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. And I don't know if you could pick this up, but we're going a little Vanderbilt basketball with this Rex Rant.
Yes.
Even I'm smart enough to figure that out.
Has Jared apologized yet? Because I saw someone said that on the text line, like, you owe an apology. I mean, Jared, according to Jared, for years now, Jerry Stackhouse thinks he's coaching volleyball, not basketball, right? Is Jared now?
He did not apologize to you, and he also said, Jerry's done a great job, but it doesn't matter.
Oh, okay.
So.
All right. There we go. That's what I figured, but I just wanted to check, even though Jared thinks I listen to him all the time. But no, it was good to hear Jared talk a little college hoops there. So I want to talk. So this is a week. I want to get into the Willie Donick Twitter sort of battle that I had yesterday. But also, Willie Donick, as he pointed out, I mean, he does this every year. He goes through this and he actually puts together a field, and he'll, yes, I think he'll do that this week. So, you know, Willie, guy who played at Vanderbilt, is a huge college basketball guy. He has a lot of credibility talking about this stuff. What really bothers me this week is, and I got into it with other people yesterday who are Vanderbilt fans, this, let me use a big word here, this myopic approach that people have where they're like, my team, blah, 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 how could we possibly be left out? You know? Okay, well, you have to look at everything. And I will be the first to say to Vanderbilt fans, I don't totally understand why the net number is so bad, but it is. I mean, Vanderbilt, I think they're either 82 or 83. I think they might have lost a spot yesterday from 82 to 83. 82. They're 82? Okay.
Yes.
I thought they lost, went down 1 to 83. But regardless, you're in the 80s still in the net, which is replaced the RPI as kind of like the baseline metric. I mean, basically, when we talk about quad one wins, quad two wins, that's based on the net rankings. And clearly, margin of victory and loss matters. And obviously, you know, Vanderbilt has some quad four losses that hurt them, things like that. But also this week, and I've said it before, it's going to be said so often, the conference record doesn't matter. They don't have that. In the committee room, they don't anywhere on the team profile. It says, here's their total record. Here's all their wins and losses. Here's their whole thing. Conference schedules are imbalanced. One team plays all the best teams twice, and another team plays all of them once and all the crappy teams twice, and that team has a way better conference record. Doesn't matter. Please stop talking about conference record. That said, let's go to the Willie Donick back and forth. All I did, I just said wins over Kentucky and Texas A&M would make things very interesting for Vanderbilt this week, which I think it would. I think if Vanderbilt beats Kentucky, first of all, Vanderbilt has to win its first game on Thursday.
Yes.
That would be against either Georgia or LSU. They'd probably like another crack at LSU. As you said earlier, Robbie, that one hurt them. Then they would play Kentucky. I'll be honest. I mean, Kentucky's playing pretty well. I don't know that I like Vanderbilt's chances to repeat against Kentucky. But if they do, now, according to Willie Donick, they're in. And see, we don't know who's going to steal a bid, but someone always does, right?
Yep.
And we don't know what all these other bubble teams are doing. Now, they are clearly improving, but you know, in the eyes of the bracketologist, you know what? These people, they ultimately don't know what the committee is going to do. They're just basing this off information and how it's usually voted. Willie Donick says, he replies to me, Vanderbilt has arguably a better resume than several teams in front of them. Do a comparison of Penn State, Mississippi State, and Vanderbilt. Tell me who you think has a better resume. Then we go back and forth, back and forth. Here's a Willie Donick tweet. Look at the games. Compare the teams. Put yourself in the committee. Who did you play? Where'd you play them? Who'd you beat? Where'd you beat them? Don't overthink the data. Vanderbilt has a better resume than several teams in front of them. I'm doing Willie, you know. Willie wasn't necessarily yelling, but, you know, like I felt like Willie was yelling.
I like to picture that he was. Me That's too. What I pictured the whole time, that he
Max
was yelling.
Max got a photo of him live tweeting you in the caps.
Yes, yes. Now, and look, I agree with this from Willie. The metric should be used but not overused. The net is not the only metric, and he's right. The KPI, as I pointed out, that's one metric where Vanderbilt ranks a lot better. But you can't – like the net is not non-factor. And so between – like, for example, Mississippi State, they just beat them, right, for sure. But the difference between those two is that Mississippi State does not have the bad losses that Vanderbilt has. Arkansas, you know, they beat them, and I think they're Arkansas 8-10, 8-10 in the SEC, which, again, doesn't matter. And they're
like 20 in net.
Right, they're exactly. Like, how are they 20 and Vanderbilt's in the 80s? It is weird, but they did beat, like, San Diego State. They beat Texas A&M, a team Vanderbilt didn't beat. You know, Vanderbilt beat Tennessee. I mean, look, you can go through all this stuff, and you can really drive yourself crazy trying to understand why the computers say what they say. But the committee's going to be in there talking, and they're going to talk about Vanderbilt, and they're going to have a chance. But also, the committee's going to be in there, and the number one question is, can this team win in the tournament? And this is where Willie really started yelling. They're going to say they have an NBA big man who no longer is on their team anymore, and that hurts them. And Willie's like, well, it doesn't matter because they beat Kentucky, Mississippi State without him. They did. And you got to do it again. You got to beat Kentucky again, and then you got to beat to me, you got to hope it's Texas A&M in the next game, and you got to win that. And if you do that, then I think on Sunday, Vanderbilt could lose the SEC title game and should watch the selection show and has a chance. But anything short of that, no. You Vanderbilt homers are going way too far with this. They're not automatically in if they beat Kentucky.
Didn't Texas A&M have a record similar to them last year? And they
and we all thought they were going to be in.
And they weren't in. Yes. And they played Tennessee in the SEC title game. And
it was like, well, they got this far. They should be fine. And then they didn't get in. Yes. So just like this thread went back and forth. And then later in the night, some Penn State fan was like, Penn State has a way better resume than Vanderbilt. What are you talking about? I mean, like everybody's screaming about it. You could go through all this stuff. Look, those bad losses hurt you. But I will agree that like the net is – it's not as big a deal as people think. And it's not – it doesn't make sense to me that it would still be this bad. All these good wins, and they're just still hanging out in the 80s. I don't get it.
I just think we need more Joe on Willie Crime. We've spent a lot of time with Joe and Jared here. We need a little Joe and Willie.
I mean, it felt good to kind of like, you know, have a little back and forth with someone other than Jared.
Yeah.
You know? Who's next?
Cathartic.
Sometimes I guess Caroline and
Tennessee.
When Caroline agrees with Jared that the cap is fake. Sure. Yeah. Capping on, you got to get after that a little
bit.
We
can do Joe versus you and Michelle me during the SEC tournament.
Well, we can do a little bit with your Kentucky homerism. So, but you know what? I think
and your Tennessee homerism and Vandy homerism.
Exactly. You feel good about Kentucky beating Vanderbilt in a rematch this week?
I do.
Okay. All right. Look, if Vanderbilt wins that game again against them, I don't think it would lock them in. But you got to tip the cap if they do that again.
Yeah, for sure.
615-737-1025. This has been the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad. You can check it out every morning at 7:45 here on the program. Coming up next, we'll be joined by Corey Curtis from News 2. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.